This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying tuned. This is the Morning Run 719, Monday, the 15th of August. And as we know, Bank Negara released the second quarter gross domestic product figures last Friday that beat consensus expectations, with the country's economy growing by 8.9%. This brings the first half GDP to 6.9%, which was driven in part by a resumption of consumption whilst the labour market recovered.
With that, Governor Tan Sri Noor Shamsia Yunus has maintained GDP growth for 2022 at between 5.3 to 6.3%, while acknowledging the headwinds of weaker than expected global growth, heightened geopolitical tensions, market volatility, and continued supply chain disruptions. However, will the second half of this year see continued strong momentum, or will the economy slow? And does a rising inflationary environment force the central bank to change their monetary policy?
All questions we are going to pose to Suhaimi Ilyas, Chief Economist at Maybank Investment Bank. Thanks for joining us, Suhaimi. Good morning to you. Now, real GDP, like we said, improved to 8.9%, which was better than Bloomberg consensus, but actually below your house view of 11.7%. What were the key factors for the gap between your view and the actual figure?
Hi, good morning. Maybe a bit of background on how we derive our quarterly GDP estimate. We make use of growth numbers in indicators like industrial production index to estimate manufacturing and mining GDP, index of services to estimate services GDP. We make use of value of construction works to estimate construction GDP. So the key factors behind the gap between our estimate and actual second quarter GDP were the differences between growth in index of services and services GDP itself and the value of construction works and construction GDP. So last quarter, index of services rose 16.7%, but actual services GDP came in 12%. Value of construction works done rebounded 6.1%, but construction recovered by only 2.4%. And just to recap, in first quarter, the gaps were not large. Index of services expanded 7% and services GDP rose 6.5%. Construction works done fell 6.2% and construction GDP contracted by 6.1%.
Now, let's just deep dive the number, because the key highlight number was private consumption. I mean, it was a whopping robust 8.3% year-on-year growth compared to 5.5%. That's revenge spending, right? So as a result, that's not sustainable, isn't it?
Yeah, we had pent up consumer spending from a combo of things, full economic opening. We have stimulus from another round of EPF withdrawals, plus the option for lower workers' contribution rate to EPF of 9% against the standard 11% that was extended into first half of this year from last year. And as we know, there were that rush to make bookings for cars before the end of the sales tax exemption on 30th June. But going forward, we expect moderation in consumer spending as the environment of rising inflation and rising interest rates eventually bite into disposable income and purchasing power, and as more money have to be basically set aside or allocated for costly essentials at the expense of discretionary spending.
Okay, have you then, are you planning to revise the house GDP target of 6% for 2022 and 4% for 2023? Is that going to be a downward revision considering all the multiple external headwinds that we're seeing, like a slow US economy and even domestic risks, like the uncertainty over the date of GE15?
We maintain our GDP growth forecast of 6% this year and 4% next year. So after the 6.9% expansion in first half, our 2022 full year growth forecast of 6% already factor in or implies moderation in growth that will continue into 2023. So as you said, and as we put it, this reflect what we call withdrawal syndrome after the sugar rush, given the earlier mentioned rising inflation and interest rate environment domestically and globally. We have the unwinding and ending of pandemic era stimulus policies and measures. And certainly we are seeing growing signs of economic slowdowns in major economies like US, Europe, China, which are our major export markets.
The big question now is, what will Bank Negara do, right, with respect to rate hikes? You know, this coming September, do you expect 25 bips, 50 bips, or unchanged?
I think Bank Negara has been consistent in terms of its messaging with regards to its unwinding of accommodative policy stance. The OPR hike will be done in a measured and gradual manner, I quote. So after the total 50 basis point hikes in May and July that raise OPR to 2.25% currently, we are pricing in another 75 basis point increases to raise and restore OPR to pre-pandemic level of 3% by first quarter of next year, which means likelihood of continued OPR hikes in the remaining two MPC meetings this year at a pace of 25 pips per hike. And this is justified by, you know, economic recovery, faster inflation, improving job markets that include rising wages and salaries, as well as to stabilize ringgit.
But Suhaimi, what do you think are their main considerations? So you mentioned economic growth is important, inflation is important. Do you think they look at the recent weakness in the ringgit when they make a decision with regards to the OPR rate, especially since the Fed still maintains this hawkish stance?
Certainly, I think they do look at efforts to stabilize ringgit, because clearly any weakness in ringgit will have implication on inflation as well through the imported channel. So as I said, there's a whole bunch of factors that they are looking into when deriving or coming at their decision with regards to OPR. But I think the message is, again, clear. They will go about this in a gradual and measured manner so that, you know, you can achieve normalization of OPR in a manner that is consistent in supporting growth, but at the same time tackling issues like inflation.
And so all eyes turn to Budget 2023 in October. The question is, can the government afford an expansionary budget in view of the subsidy bill that's been escalating?
To be honest, our view is Budget 2023 will be less expansionary than the 6% to 6.5% budget deficit to GDP ratio we have had since 2020. We expect next year budget to, in a way, kickstart the medium-term fiscal consolidation to cut the budget deficit to GDP ratio to 3 to 3.5% by 2025, as stated in the 12th Malaysia Plan. Plus, to ensure that, you know, the government current debt ceiling of 65% of GDP is not breached. And the fiscal policy narratives of late have been about fiscal reforms, you know, shifting to targeted fuel subsidy from current blanket fuel subsidy, more sustainable revenue sources rather than depending on volatile commodity-related revenue and one-off revenue with measures like Cukai Makmur, the tabling of Fiscal Responsibility Act. So this, I guess, adds another layer of our so-called withdrawal syndrome affecting economic growth outlook next year. But, I mean, budget next year, from my perspective, wish list is spending should focus on stuff like digital infrastructure after decades of pump priming via physical infrastructure, improve the quality of public services, especially education and healthcare, strengthening, you know, the social security system, safety net, and narrowing the gaps in development and growth between states in the country, and address other securities issues, including food, energy, cybersecurities. So those are the kind of things that I would like to see in Budget 2023 rather than, you know, sort of a continued sort of populist type of budget.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Suhaimi Ilyas, Chief Economist at Maybank Investment Bank, giving us his view on his hope for Budget 2023. And he does highlight some very important things that we need to move away from this necessity of having physical infrastructure, another highway that goes nowhere, towards developing things like a digital infrastructure, improving public services, improving social security, narrowing the gap between states, with fiscal reform very much on everyone's mind.
I find it very interesting that our Bank Negara governor was saying that, look, targeted subsidies work when we are able to tame inflation, hence why the OPR rate hikes are necessary, right, to hit up to 3%. So that's a tandem of moving OPR rates higher so that the government can then also implement its targeted subsidy mechanism.
Yeah, but the thing about all this is political will, right? So I think the solutions are there. People know what they need to do, whether they will actually carry it out, because as usual, politicians want to stay in power, right? So everybody, of course, wants to do the populist measures, but somebody needs to be the grown-up in the room. But we'll be watching this space. Next, we'll be speaking to Catherine Birch, Senior Economist at ANZ, on Australia's economy. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.